You're listening to EW Live on SiriusXM Stars. Here are your hosts, Jessica Shaw and Dalton Ross.
Welcome back to EW Live on SiriusXM Stars 109. I'm Jessica Shaw. What an unbelievable pleasure and honor to bring back to the show one of the most insightful, talented people I know, former editor-in-chief of Entertainment Weekly, Henry Goldblatt.
It's so good to be here, Jessica. Thank you so much for having me.
We talk often times when it is not over the radio, but I thought that we had to talk on the radio because you wrote a really fascinating story, just a little New York Times piece called How to Shoot a Sex Scene in a Pandemic, cue the mannequins. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. But first, before we get to that, because I do feel like everyone has to catch up with you for a few minutes, like, tell me how your life has been during quarantine. Henry's the only person that actually has his hair cut and, like, for some reason looks good and healthy. Justify yourself.
I don't know. I'm living the quarantine dream. Like, I've turned part of my condo into a home gym, so I work out. The dog is happy to have me around. I get to write some freelance stuff. It's been okay.
Tell me what you've been watching. What has been your pop culture consumption of a pandemic?
I'd say the best thing I've seen during this time is Dead to Me on Netflix, which is not a revelation to a lot of people. A lot of people have seen it, but it's one of my top couple of shows of the year. And I know you guys were all talking about your top shows of the year, I believe, last week. And thank you for reminding me. I saw Search Party. I scouted out that third season of Search Party and made me so happy.
Oh my God. I still haven't gotten to that because I was finishing up so many other things that, thank you, Henry, for reminding me one more thing that I've fallen behind on. Well, I mean, I'm glad there are things that you can still catch up on, because even like you said, LA had reopened to an extent and things were going back into production. And I feel like there was almost this little teeny tiny window of hope. And that was right around when you were reporting this story about things going back into production while still being very careful. And you focus on the fascinating thing of, even with things going back into production, how on earth do you shoot a sex scene? How do you film two people kissing when, like, no, you can't even be within 6 feet of anyone now? Tell me, like, when you started reporting that and what the mood was and what the vibe was.
Yeah, Jessica, you hit the nail on the head. When I started reporting it, it was a lot more hopeful than it is in California right now, when things are starting to shut down again and it's looking pretty bleak. But what's been going on is a lot of these TV shows have been doing Zoom rooms, or like their writer's room over Zoom. And so they've written a lot of these shows that were supposed to go back into production have written most of their seasons already. And so they're grappling with these questions right now of sort of like, how do you film an intimate scene? It just feels dangerous to go into an office and have someone in a cubicle 6 feet away. How does it feel when you have to go to work and put your life on the line kissing someone? And so that was the question I was trying to get at, and the creative solutions that showrunners are trying to employ.
Please tell everyone how it's basically the lead of your story, and you're talking about The Bold and the Beautiful, which I didn't realize was resuming, I think you say in your story, July 20th, which is this Monday, I think.
Yes.
There will be new episodes. Paint the picture of a sex scene on Bold and the Beautiful.
So I really want to give it up to the executive producer of Bold and Beautiful, Bradley Bell, who had a very good sense of humor about all this. So he said originally that they tried to strip out the sex or intimate scenes from the show, and that the show felt flat. And so he's like, well, we've got to provide some kind of intimacy. So they decided to use mannequins. And one of my favorite quotes in the piece is, he said that a lot of his actors are getting their first latex kiss.
So good. Like, where are they getting all these mannequins? I read this and I was like, I need this to be like a book. Like, I have so many questions. This is like a 10-part series.
Mannequins haven't been used very much for sex scenes before, but they are used sometimes in crowd scenes.
Like yourself.
Riverdale, for example, had filmed a prom before everything shut down, but they still have to film the character's graduation. And so the showrunner there was telling me that he was probably going to be using mannequins in the audience. And so, like, you have real people spread 6 feet apart and then putting mannequins in between them. And then you just dupe it over again and again in production. And unless you're really, really eagle-eyed viewer, you probably won't be able to tell the difference.
That's so interesting. People are trying to figure out how to fill space. But when it's being filmed, it's just, it's a whole other situation. You interviewed so many people and just different showrunners and everything. And they talk about just finding a way to just be creative and find, because you can't just say, oh, in this show, and often shows like you talk about Dynasty in your piece, and these are, and Bold and the Beautiful, no one wants to watch a cerebral conversation on Bold and the Beautiful. Like, this is not Waiting for Godot, you know? So there needs to be some kind of intimacy going on. And instead of saying, this is not doable, tell me about like the ways that they're sort of trying to be creative.
Well, the four biggest Hollywood unions led by SAG-AFTRA and the Directors Guild of America have put out this 36-page document that sort of outlines safety procedures, and it breaks up a set into zones, and the most innermost zone, zone one, is where PPE can't be worn. And so, and those people are getting tested every day. It's a very limited number of people who are allowed to enter the zone. It's almost like you'll get electrocuted if you do and you don't have the proper credentials, you know, it's that type of safety measure. So there's some shows that are adhering to that. One of the most interesting things that I think is going on is with the L Word revival. And the showrunner there is a really, really terrific woman named Marjorie Lewis Ryan. And she's talking about how some of her cast have spouses or are married to people who are also happen to be actors. So she may be casting those actors in supporting roles. She may be saying, okay, I'm going to film this intimate scene, but instead of your love interest on the show, your real life partner is going to be the person whose leg we see or whose back of the head we see. They're really employing some very creative ways to get around it.
I thought that was so fascinating when I read that and you talk about that in the story. I remember interviewing, I think I told you this, I interviewed Peter Sarsgaard, and he was like, yeah, the only reason I can make my movie is because Maggie Gyllenhaal, is directing it. So like they can, it limits the risk when you have someone you're already quarantining with. I have to imagine, especially with a show like Bold and the Beautiful, though, are they filming more hours? I don't know, maybe they might just do like fewer takes of everything so it ends up being around the same, but there's so much content they have to get out there.
Yeah, and especially the SAG-AFTRA document recommends capping workday limits at 10 hours, which if you've ever been on a set, you know that's virtually impossible because they want to allow extra time for cleaning and what have you. And what I was finding, it didn't make its way into the article, unfortunately, because it was a little off topic, but what I was finding was a lot of these showrunners are actually writing longer and fewer scenes, mm-hmm. and the scripts are shorter because they know that it's going to take longer to produce.
That's very interesting. It creates just like a different mood to the show, but it's a necessity, and I think that's probably a good choice. In your reporting, did you hear about shows that are going to somehow write in the time that we're going through, or do you feel like people that you're talking to and you know so many people in the industry even beyond this article, but just in general when you talk to people, do you find that they are trying to like not deal with reality in their fantasy world?
It really depends on the show. In talking to Sarah Gamble, who's a showrunner of You, she said, we're not going to hit people over the head with the pandemic, but our show is sort of loosely based in the real world. So there'll be some knowledge or voiceover that the world has either gone through this or is going through this in some way. Other shows, the showrunner of Dynasty, a guy named Josh Rooms, was like, nobody's watching Dynasty to see a pandemic. No, we're not doing that at all. Sort of everything in between. I think it's going to be interesting, for example, with a show like The Conners, which I didn't interview for the story because they don't have intimate scenes per se, but like something like that, that is so based on one family's hard luck and like in bad economic times, and how that show is going to have to grapple with it.
Yeah. And then there's a show like you interviewed Julie Plec, and she talks about how like, God, we can't go 22 episodes without kissing. Like we're going to have to find a way, which I thought was really interesting too.
It's funny. A lot of these showrunners that I've interviewed are such pros and have been in this industry a very long time and are used to sort of sleights of camera and sleights of hand that we as viewers don't necessarily see. A lot of what they're doing in these Zoom rooms and these writers' rooms is brainstorming, like, how can we create a show that looks realistic and authentic?
One of the people you interviewed was like, look, I come from the independent film world. I'm so used to like making the list of like the dream scenario and then like slowly but sure, like whittling it down to what we could actually shoot. And it sort of seems like that's going to be a reality for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think also a lot of these shows you're going to see taking place more outdoors because obviously it's safer. And some of the elaborate sets that you once saw aren't going to be there. And these series are going to look very, very different when they come back, when they eventually come back to the screen.
For sure. And like, and now, by the way, what is going on? Because Governor Newsom in, and obviously some things shoot in California, but they're also in Canada. And if they are filming in Canada, I don't think Americans can now go. Like, it's just, everything is so stalled production wise. What is your sense after reporting this? And I have to imagine when you were talking to all of these showrunners, there was probably a plan in place to go back. And I wonder, like, are you feeling hopeful as a viewer and as a fan of these shows that we're going to see things this year?
This year, perhaps, but certainly not on a timetable that we're used to in September, like with the big fall premiere week. I don't see how it's going to happen. The good news is that once these shows do go back into production, vast majority of the scripts have been written. Shows, as you know, oftentimes have to stop production because they're behind on script writing or what have you. And so that's not going to be the case this year. I don't know. And as you say, a lot of these shows film in Canada, and right now we can't even get into Canada. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
And you mentioned this earlier, but can you talk a little bit more about the SAG outlines? What is their main concern? Is it like safety of the actors, distance, things like that?
That's exactly it, Jessica. Yeah, that's exactly it. And this is the first time that the four the main unions, SAG-AFTRA, DGA, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, and the Teamsters all got together, the first time in decades, all got together to produce a document like this. And it's all about safety. You know, what I'd love to report out a little more, and I think it's going to be interesting story in about 2 or 3 months, is these guidelines are incredibly, incredibly expensive to implement. Like, just the lighting, the way they lay out the lighting procedures alone, I don't know how much a regular lighting procedure costs, but I gotta think it's 1.5 times, maybe 2 times the regular cost. All of a sudden, the studios are going to be facing a much bigger price tag to produce these shows. And so I gotta wonder if the studio is going to look at a P&L of a certain series and be like, well, God, it's not worth sending this one back into production because our costs just doubled or what have you. And we can't, and the show does an X amount of rating. We can't afford to do that. So I'm wondering if there's shows like that that just will have to sit out the pandemic and, you know, come back in 1.5 years or whenever we get a vaccine.
Yeah, I've also been wondering if this will mean that certain shows, and some shows, I mean, we're definitely like shifting into an era where all shows are like 10 episodes or fewer for a season.
Oh,
but it
100%.
Makes me think about if the shows that are more episodes, like Riverdale, for example, I'm sure, you know, as has more than that, if they're going to double down, and once it's already in production, even though that they've done all of their Zoom rooms and they've written scripts, just do like 2 seasons at once, or just do so much so that there's some kind of original content that they can put out there.
Before this most recent flare up in California, I naively thought that things were going to subside a bit and that there was going to be a rush of production in like August and September before a winter flare up in COVID. Obviously, that's not going to be the case, unfortunately. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think once it's okay to go back into production, like, people are just going to be working like dogs in order to produce as much content as possible because consumers and viewers are hungry for it.
I also thought it was interesting that in that SAG outline, how they talk about how before there's going to be some kind of intimacy scene that the people will have to be COVID tested and they'll get their results within like 1 in 12 hours. I got tested yesterday and they were like, yeah, you'll probably see the results in 10 days, but don't worry about if it's 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, SAG-AFTRA, like, can I get a membership? Because I mean,
seriously,
there's so much work that needs to be done in order to make this safe.
The Bold and the Beautiful actually went into production and then had to shut down a few days because they didn't like the testing method or the testing brand that they were using. They didn't like it very much, and they were getting too many inconclusive results. And so they shut down for 2 or 3 days until they could get another testing method that is much more reliable. So I hear your point, Jessica. Aside from like driving to Dodger Stadium here in LA, I can't find a place to get tested. Like, it's—
Sounds like loads of fun.
Can you imagine? Like, I don't go to Dodger Stadium not during a pandemic.
You're like, I don't do baseball. So.
Is that the sport that it is? Yeah, no, I don't do baseball.
I don't even know. Ice skating? Is it figure skating? I don't know. I'm here with the
LA Dodgers are a gymnastics team.
Perfect. Okay. Well, then I'll be there. I'll be there. Yeah. I'm here with the wonderful Henry Goldblatt, whose story, you can see it online in the New York Times right now, How to Shoot a Sex Scene in a Pandemic. Cue the Mannequins. You are, I mean, Henry, you know so much about entertainment and pop culture in general. And one of the things I loved about this piece is how you put it in a really interesting perspective. I hadn't thought of this at all with, you know, just talking about intimacy and even talking about sex and relationships. And you kind of said that it's in some ways an echo of what was on screen in the 1970s. And you mentioned a show like Mary Tyler Moore, and there were things said about her sex life while not shown. And could we be revisiting that kind of storytelling?
100%. And talking to the showrunner from Riverdale, that's very much what he said. He's like, you know, we have this weird 1950s retro vibe to our show. We're going to lean into that a little more. Riverdale also is not going to be talking about the pandemic, in part because they've done sort of quarantine type of plot lines before, but also because they had long before this planned a 5 or 6 year time jump because Jessica, as you know better than anyone, or you and I both know, the college years of certain TV shows can be awfully awkward. And so awkward. God bless Riverdale just being like, nope.
California University.
Nope, you do not have to see them in college. We are just skipping right over that. So they're doing a time jump and presumably, and knock on wood, that COVID won't be around in 5 or 6 years.
Can you tell the Rock Hudson story that I did not know, which I found so fascinating that you write about in your piece?
Yeah, so this COVID situation has echoes to the AIDS crisis in the 1980s. And Rock Hudson was cast on Dynasty as Linda Evans' love interest in 1984, long before people really knew how HIV was transmitted. And a lot of people thought it was transmitted through kissing. So he gets a script where he's supposed to kiss Linda Evans's character. And according to his autobiography, he gets very upset and freaks out because he doesn't want to tell people that he has AIDS. And he ends up deciding not to tell anybody, not telling the producers, not telling Linda Evans, gargling a whole bunch of mouthwash, and then doing a very, very, very closed mouth kiss. And in his book, in Linda Evans's memoir, she can't figure out why he's doing it so closed mouth, because it's calling for super passionate. It's supposed to be this big culmination of their romance. And take after take, he wouldn't do it. And then afterwards, when Linda Evans found out that he had AIDS and that he was trying to protect her, she felt very touched by it. And it's funny, I think
like,
that
but
episode-
But he had such minty breath.
Yeah, exactly. I think that episode aired like in February or March of 1985. I didn't realize how quickly, he passed away in October 85. It was very soon after.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. It feels like there are so many things that, so many parallels to draw from the past and like just different. It is certainly an interesting time. Henry, I love this story. I thought it was so interesting and interesting
you.
In a way also that there's so much more to the story. You know what I mean? And even when the vaccine comes out, it just feels like there's going to be this shift in the industry. And this is just the beginning.
I think the way TV production is going to be affected is going to change for a long time.
Everyone should check out Henry's story in the New York Times. It's called How to Shoot a Sex Scene in a Pandemic. And you can also follow Henry on Twitter at Henry Goldblatt. And I've tweeted about it and a gazillion of other people have because it's a great piece. Henry, thank you so much for joining me.
I adore you. I adore seeing you.
All right. And we will be back on EW Live.